Good evening, America, and good afternoon, Australia. Thank you for listening. You're live on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. You're listening to Tony Lontis Radio, Tony Everyday Business. And I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who's been listening on live this week. I've had a number of connections with people who have mentioned this show and their enjoyment of listening to it, and I'm wonderfully pleased to say that when you type in heart-centered leadership or governance, it comes up with Radio Tony Everyday Business and the contact details for Lisa and the team at the Governance Collective. So this is the last of our 8-series show with Lisa Coletta and the Governance Collective. And so I was a little bit teary this morning thinking, oh no, these shows have been such fun to do with such worthwhile and valuable information for CEOs and those in leadership across the world. And just a reminder that you can connect with Lisa and the team by using the email support@governancecollective.com. And also, Lisa on Governance Collective website has links to her webinars, teaching, and all the amazing things that she does in terms of preparing CEOs, advisory boards, and those in leadership to lead in a way that is heart-centered. So for our final show, we thought we'd bring back Lisa and the gorgeous Irene Lomas. Now, before we do that, I just want to remind you that Lisa is passionate about corporate governance. She's a change leader and she leads a collective of senior specialists that shape, drive, and implement right-sized, efficient governance policy and related frameworks into businesses across the world. She's worked in both the public and private sector. She's worked with CEOs, advising chairs, boards, committees, managing directors, and executives on corporate governance, HR, and delivery of business strategy. Lisa holds multiple degrees in management, corporate governance, company directorship, and is an NLP practitioner to boot. Suffice to say, she is extraordinarily well qualified and experienced in corporate management education and training, but her passion remains heart-centered leadership. So this morning we're going to do a little bit of a run over of the things that we've key points we've talked about in the last 8 shows, and we'll start with last week first. So last week we spoke about heart-centered leadership in terms of spirituality and the idea that we have a human connection to something that's bigger than us. Effective leaders understand the importance of employees who find meaning in their work, and those leaders establish an organizational culture based on values, employees' well-being, and corporate social responsibility. So, Lisa, I'm wondering if you'd like to quickly recap on some of your thoughts around our discussion last week, and then I'm going to include Irene in this conversation too, as she wasn't with us last week. So, good morning, Lisa, and hello, Irene.
Hello there. Good morning. Good morning. Yes, our show last week, for those that weren't listening, centered on the internal alignment and the broader alignment from a spiritual standpoint with heart-centered governing leaders. And the concept we talked about was the alignment between our head, which is our personality, our hearts, and our guts. And that head-heart-gut alignment is this feeling that is something that isn't very easily articulated for some individuals, but it tends to, I guess, feel like this lack of connectedness or this incongruence that we have inside that just makes us feel like something isn't quite right, something's not quite aligned. Over time, I think we, as I said last week, we talked about last week, leaders sometimes can get really disconnected from themselves and not realize that over time that they're actually feeling this incongruence. And of course, the knock-on effect of that incongruence is that everyone is receiving you with that incongruence. So that version of you that you're actually putting out there is not a high integrity or a high authentic version of who you really are. Thinking about our show too, Tony, it's kind of one of those things where when leaders actually step through the door and start working on a daily basis, they're actually setting the tone for every conversation that they're actually having throughout the business. And so because if they are actually stepping in with that real ego, I guess, based approach, what they're going to get is ego back at them. Hearts speak to hearts and egos speak to egos. And so the interface and those conversations that should be easy get a lot harder, and, you know, work gets a lot harder as well, while that ego-centered or head personality-centered view is used as the foundation or the basis for that. I guess the other component we talked about was the broader level of spirituality and the links that we have with the universe much more broadly. Like attracts like. Like people attract like people. And part of there are theories around how that happens and why that actually occurs. But if ego talks to ego and heart talks to heart, you know, some may say that you're actually being attracted or drawing in what you're actually sending out and giving out there from a pure energetic standpoint. And being really, really aligned with your true self means that you're actually attracting the right people within your circles and within your environment for the right reason and the right purpose. And it has a lot of knock-on effects, Tony, to how we lead people. Huge amount.
So I was going to ask Irene, from your perspective, you do this work with Lisa all the time, and we know that Lisa is a heart-centered leader within herself. How does that affect how you work together and how you work as a team in helping organizations do this heart-centered leadership work?
It's actually very interesting that you ask that, Tony, because we complement each other remarkably on that particular level. So when Lisa and I first met, it was some years ago, right? It was about 7-odd years ago. And we were basically interviewing each other for like a short-term project that Lisa had at the organisation she was with at the time. And we've spoken about what we thought of each other since, you know, during our first meeting. There were things that resonated for me when I initially met Lisa. And these are unspoken things that you sense when you meet a person that you are simpatico with. Do you know what I mean? And so one of the things that really resonated for me is I sat across the table from a woman and I thought, there's a no-nonsense person here who's got a great sense of humour, who really is as passionate about decision-making in a really competent, accountable way as I am. And that's pretty much how it's played out for us, you know, since that time. And I think we have a good dynamic when we actually work with people and we work with boards on that particular front. One of the things that's been really interesting about my observations this year, and I'm talking about the year of coronavirus, right? The year of the big run.
We're never going to forget, are we?
No.
Never going to forget.
Because this is actually, I think, a seismic shift in a lot of people's.
Agreed.
And the comment you made at the beginning when you said it's about the human connection to something bigger than ourselves. This is a conversation I have been having this year with many people, and a lot of them have surprised me in actually coming up with comments on this front, because usually the conversation starts along the lines of, you know, it is time for us to do things differently. And when you delve a little bit more into what they mean, what they actually mean is, and we need to do things better than we have done them before.
Yep.
And so, and it is, it has a lot to do with doing things better, has a lot to do with all of the notions we've been talking about, with having empathy, with dealing with people in a fair and transparent way, in being really clear in your communications, you know. So I think people really respond to that an awful lot better than the opposite of that, you know. And I think that our behaviours BC, before corona, we are all looking at them. We are all looking at them right now because we're having the opportunity. We a lot of us are actually working away from our work environment. We're required to work from home to kind of some element of isolation and work distancing. So we've actually had the opportunity to be a bit introspective about things that may not have worked for us as a species in the past that we yes. may need to review, look at, and reframe and pivot. It's been a very
absolutely
interesting year, Tony, very interesting.
Absolutely. I was just going to add to that, girls, that I have had so many conversations this week around leadership and things that are happening within organizations and corporations, and that there is actually such a lot of bad behavior showing up. And rather than that bad behavior being perpetuated, I'm actually starting to see that the leadership is going, no, that's not okay. Yes. We're going to do it this way moving yes. forward, which is so encouraging and exciting for the world at large, because if we start having more and more heart-centered leaders in politics and across the big conglomerations of corporations across the world, we start to see the change that we want within humanity. And that's a fantastic thing and a very exciting thing for the Governance Collective to be front and center involved with. And so I know, so we're reviewing our series of shows, and in the second week we spoke about business and corporate governance and why organizational structure is so important, why processes and policy, operations, risk management, ethics, trust and transparency were important in small to huge business. So, Lisa, can you just remind our listeners why businesses should think about a formalized organizational structure and a framework around policy and processes, no matter how small or big they are? These concepts are widely accepted in big corporations, less so in small business. But I actually believe, and I know Lisa does too, that even in small business, they have a place and are so important. So Lisa, over to you first, and then I'll get Irene for her comments as well.
So Tony, structure, all the structure and documentation and all that kind of thing that provide really great insights and perspectives and drawing those nice lines around what can and can't be done and which role should or shouldn't do things and all the rest of it are really, really important from a really fundamental baseline. At the most simplest form, everyone in the organisation needs to be able to row in the same direction with a common understanding. Yeah. That common understanding around where they play, where others play, so that everyone has a clear understanding of what their role is and what they're there to do and which direction they're actually facing. And all of those documents and, you know, processes like, you know, managing risk and strategic plans and all those other things are really there to make sure that everyone is on the same page and they're all rowing in the same direction. And that's what the fundamental thing is around it. And, you know, for those organisations out there that think that they might be too small and don't need governance, I would say to you that while ever you are relying on people and not process and not policy and documentation like that, you are actually potentially limiting your ability to be able to grow in an exponential way. And what can happen in some organisations is that they can be really small one minute and really, really big the next. And they just don't have what they need to enable them to pivot, just like Irene was talking about. Yes. That ability to have that agility comes, believe it or not, from having that great common understanding and those structure and those frameworks in place. They grow as the organization grows, and they build the foundation for organizations to grow really, really effectively in that way. It really, I guess, is one of those fundamental components that, yeah, as you rightly said, I'm really passionate about every organisation having. Of course, it needs to be right-sized. You know, you wouldn't expect you wouldn't expect a large multinational to have the same documentation as a small family-run business, or vice versa.
That's right.
However, the same sort of framework components and the right size level of documentation and protocols and everyone being on the same page and trained and understanding on where they play is actually quite repeatable regardless of what the size of the organisation is. It's just a matter of it
absolutely
being the right level and the right way.
And those principles around structure and framework and policy are the same for big and small. Again, the size comes into it, like Lisa was saying, so you wouldn't, you know, have the myriad that you for a smaller family business as opposed to a large organisation, but the principles are actually the same. And that's because primarily what those principles are is that they are building blocks of a solid business base, right? And
yes.
Think about when we buy a house or rent a house or build a house. We're looking for something that's got really strong foundations that will last a long time. So it's the same thing for small business as well, for smaller businesses, because most smaller businesses actually don't want to stay small forever. They want to grow, right? And
yes.
So a small business with strong foundations is really well positioned to grow and to deal with the challenges that can come with growth, right? So
absolutely.
And apart from growth, which usually happens over the medium to the long term, in the short term, smaller businesses that actually use these concepts to build a strong base, they have a really good toolkit for dealing with the everyday challenges that come up. Yeah, so it's
absolutely
important on those levels too.
It is. I'm actually going to share with the listeners later in the program just a little process that I've done just recently and as a direct result of working and listening to Lisa over these last 8 weeks. So in the third show, we touched on discussion around teams and team management, and we sort of got into the space where we were talking about performance appraisal and how that can drive business success. So Irene, I might let you comment first on the importance of team management from your perspective, and then we'll get Lisa's thoughts as well.
Sure. So I take a bit of a step back from that and look at a business and an organisation. And a business and an organisation is actually its people. Yeah. So the people that are businesses or an organisation's customers or investors or regulators interact with, they're the actual face of that organisation. And if...
Yeah.
Your customers, your investors, and your regulators are interacting with people who are confident, who are engaging and approachable, then the results for the business are really positive on many levels. So when the business actually invests in their people, what they're actually
yes.
investing in is in the human capital of the business, right?
Yes.
And teamwork, team performance, performance appraisals, position descriptions, you know, expectations, standards of conduct, that's all part of the investment process in the human
yes.
capital of a business. Because
mm-hmm.
what these things do is they tell your people that you value them, that you care about them, and that they're an important part of your business. So when an organisation invests in its human capital in this way, the people that are part of the organisation are not just happy and productive, but they actually become ambassadors for your business and your organisation.
Yes.
And that's so important, you know, for any business to have that ambassadorship base out there in the world and in the community.
It's invaluable.
Absolutely. You cannot put a price on that. Yep.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
In fact, it's actually not just, it is incredibly invaluable, but it's not just the investment being one way. What actually occurs from that investment is then the level of commitment and motivation by your team members, if it's done really well, is then reciprocated yeah. by the employees. I can tell you that you always remember interfacing with employees in organisations that have done it really, really well. And I was actually relaying a story
yes.
to Irene just about conversation I'd had previously, or an interface I had a couple of years ago now, 2 years ago. I went into one of those stores called Kiki K. Kiki K, for those who don't know, is a stationery, like a specialized stationery store that sells really lovely books and pencil cases and things like that. And I had my two teams with me, which is doomed for disaster. It always costs me a lot of money when I ever go in with my kids. And I walked into this store, and I've got to tell you, Tony, the human interface that I actually was greeted, the human that I was greeted with in this store was the most phenomenal human I've ever interfaced with in a sales environment in my entire life. This gentleman was embodied the tone and the ethics of the organization and was so passionate about the products that he almost immediately built this energy bubble that everyone was just attracted to. He had us talking about what it is that we were after and, you know, what brings us out today. And he was enthusiastic about the products and was excited about some new thing that they just brought in. And he just embodied everything about the organization in such an extraordinary way. I'm actually still surprised that I've remembered that experience 2 years ago.
Yes.
Amazing. It was actually absolutely phenomenal. And when I actually asked him, have you always loved stationery? Because, you know, he sort of stepped back from it going, wow, the enthusiasm is really. And he goes, this organization and this place and this stuff, he goes, I just know that it changes people's lives. He goes, I know it changes my life and it changes other people's life. He goes, people might look at it as just a pencil case or just a little diary or something. He goes, it gives people structure and purpose and focus, and it does it in a way that enables them to really value themselves. And the way he talked about the products and services in this store is just incredible. And I don't know any organization, any employer that wouldn't want their employees talking about their brand and their products that way.
Absolutely.
How much would you pay for your employees to talk about the organization they work in that way? It's invaluable. Invest in people. And I'm not sure how much they invest in training. I'm not sure if he's just an extraordinary human being in regard to that stuff. But it was really quite something. Really, really was.
That's a wonderful, wonderful story to show the power of investing in your human, the humans within your organization, because they can make or break a business without a shadow of a doubt. And oftentimes you hear so many stories about the ill treatment of human beings within an organization, and it always makes me quite upset, because I without a doubt believe that humanity and humans within a business are your biggest assets, largely the biggest thing that can make or break a business is the human component of a business or organization. Which leads us to one of our more interesting conversations, and that was around heart-centered leadership versus ego-centered leadership. And I know that we went down that deep, dark path of American politics, because it was around about just before the election or just after the election, and we were able to very clearly articulate what a heart-centered leader looks like versus an ego-centered leader. So Lisa, again, just remind people what a heart-centered leader looks like versus an ego-centered leader.
Certainly, Tony. So for us, we find that the lens that most I guess organizations or individuals in organization looks at is really around how they trust. Because how they trust themselves and their own decision making, and how they actually trust others, and how the processing of the of what they're receiving from others is actually undertaken by them, and whether they're actually responding or reacting to the interface with other humans. And so when individuals place trust in their true selves and they're a heart-centered governing leader, the types of traits or behaviors you see from them are things like you feel very connected with those individuals. You just feel connected and supported by them. They're individuals that listen to and they really act on their intuition. And that stuff we talked about last week around the head, the heart, and the gut being really, really aligned. Yes. Recognizing components mm-hmm. of the head is ego-based and it's personality-based, but they actually listen to and they're prepared to respond and not react when dynamics are actually happening around them.
Yes.
They actually naturally self-improve. So what they tend to do is that they actually know enough about themselves to know that they get triggered by certain things from time to time. And, you know, uh-huh. we all get different things, but heart-centered governing leaders typically know what triggered them and they proactively address them. And even if they are triggered, yeah. they actually really, really own it. They go, you know what, I was triggered by that. I've got to sit back and really understand myself well and yeah. understand what's triggering me and do a little bit of work on themselves to be able to improve when those things occur because it's a learning for them. It's a new part of themselves going, oh, that's interesting. I didn't think I was sensitive about X, Y, Z, but clearly I am. I need to think about that further and sort of sit with it yeah. a bit more. Heart-centered leaders, you know you've got a great heart-centered leader around you when they can naturally distinguish between their ego selves and their true intentions. And as I said earlier, hearts talk to hearts. So you actually know when you're around a heart-centered governing leader because you know what their intent is because they're open and transparent. You know that they've considered different yes. when they talk to you. You know that they're being driven by their true selves because of their authenticity, and you also know mm-hmm. that they're closing check. They're actually recognizing that everyone has a bit of ego, but they've actually got their ego in the passenger. So yeah. it's one of those things where better heart-centered governing leaders build this mechanism to understand themselves really, really well over time, and they correct and improve, and that responsiveness around improvement recognizes that sometimes the first answer is actually not to respond and to actually take the time to process information instead of assuming that you've always got to have an answer all the time. So they're kind of the higher level, I guess, components of what a heart-centered governing leader looks and feels like. And keeping in mind that this is the context of using these skills in a decision-making role in an organisation.
Yeah. Irene, for heart-centered leaders, it's about walking the talk, isn't it? You don't tend to see elements of hypocrisy. You don't tend to see do as I say.
Have you
found that, Irene?
Absolutely. And you know, we intuitively.
Irene, can I get you to talk up just a little bit, please, love?
Can you hear me better? Is that better?
Yeah. That's lovely. Beautiful. Thank you.
We all intuitively know and gravitate towards that heart-centered leader that Lisa described. And what is it that they have? And I think there are a lot of things that they have and a lot of things that they don't have, right? It's a combination
yes.
of things. It's a combination of qualities, the what's they have, mm-hmm. and then behaviours, the how they then deploy the what's. It's the walking the talk that you mentioned, you know.
Yes.
So when we talk about qualities such as authenticity, integrity, approachability, trustworthiness, self-reflection, mm-hmm. openness, you know, and you know, in many cases a sense of humor is a biggie as well, you know, because you've got to be able to have a bit of a laugh.
Definitely.
Again, yeah. So
definitely.
Yeah, they're part of the qualities, and then when you talk about the behaviours, the how you actually exhibit that, and how good, really obvious heart-centered leaders actually displayed, it's things
yes.
like treating people fairly and respectfully. It's about communicating clearly, transparently, and not playing games about messages.
Yes,
it's about setting boundaries and actually holding those boundaries, right? It's also about making rather than avoiding the tough decisions and having those tough conversations, because invariably in life, it's those really hard ones, decisions and conversations, that we've got to have. And the way that we have them is really important, you know. So it's actually very interesting. And throughout this year, like I said a little bit earlier, more people are identifying that we want our leaders to be that way rather than not. You know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of leads us into week six, where we talked about hard conversations, remaining professional and owning our part in the process. And if ever there was a year, 2020 has been governed by hard conversations. So it's those hard conversations from our political leadership around how we manage the virus. That's a tough conversation to have with a population used to freedom to now say, well, guys, you're going to have to lock down and you're going to have to do this, this, and this. And I guess that it's caused us to reflect on that a lot and how those messages were conveyed to us by our leaders and how they've led us through this virus. I hate to digress into American politics, but in evidence at the moment is a clear ego-centered leadership that has led to a virus that is out of control. Lisa, if there'd been a hard conversation, perhaps there would be a different outcome. Yes?
Look, most definitely. I mean, it's quite fundamental for leaders to recognize that they can't set themselves and how they feel about things personally as a priority. And, you know, the power plays are more important than really, really great decision making for the greater good and the greater all, which is really quite it's quite disappointing. I don't know how individuals who, you know, voted differently this time around within the US feel about the fact that they may have voted for the guy that's currently in last time around, and recognizing that it wasn't really well known that the individual really saw himself as a priority, and he was, I guess, coming from a world where he was quite untouchable. And not creating an environment, I guess, where he was empowering others to do the work that they needed to do. And so I kind of sit back from it and I think, well, would any conversation really change the outcome? Not really. Fortunately, the voters have spoken, and, you know, what do they say? Yes. The dog barks and the caravan moves on, so to speak. I guess it's kind of the reality of it. This caravan's taking a little bit of time. I understand it's a caravan that's not going to come by till January and move on until after January. But
I know.
It's a long time.
It's interesting, isn't it, that the situation with coronavirus and how it's played out in the US, it's quite an interesting example of the really serious and damaging consequences to people when leadership really doesn't look out for them. It's a really stark example, isn't it, of how significant the impacts for the population can actually be. You know.
I think that's right, Irene. And I also think too that I did hear a report the other day. I will say that I'm not sure if it's happened since, but at the time I think it was Tuesday morning, because it may have happened since. But on Tuesday morning, I heard a report that several media outlets were actually counting the number of days since the President of the United States even addressed the nation around coronavirus, and it was something like 32 days since the President has even acknowledged that it's actually happening to us right now. And and of course, all the jokes come out around, you know, he's seeing great graphs with lots of red on it, thinking that they're winning seats, and it's actually the increase of corona and how far out of control it is, and all that kind of thing. It really, I think, it kind of reminds us that sometimes individuals in positions of power can have very, very warped beliefs, and their warped beliefs are then fed by the yes people around them. And so yes. I think it's really easy to lay blame and, you know, blame it on everyone else, blame it on other countries who gave it to us in the first place or whatever it is you want to, you know, play the blame game as much as you like. But the reality is that there's this warped belief. Everyone's playing the game and everyone's keeping up with the story because that's the agreed story that everyone needs to go with. And those individuals, I sense, that are who have got the right voice and are actually speaking up have been silenced. So they're no longer there. They're no longer there because they've been asked to not be there, or they're no longer there because they're at a point now where they just don't feel that their knowledge, skills and experience is being valued in any way. And so while it can happen in the political environment, it can happen in every organisation, every and any organisation. Same things play out. And as much as there is, you know, there's a lack of, you know, jobs worldwide now, there's lots of different industries that are just shutting down because this is actually, you know, being appropriately managed and controlled. We don't need airlines right now, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of one of those things where there might not be a lot of choice around jobs, but people can still choose to walk.
Yes.
And still choose to make do because the threat of not having a job is far less than actually putting up with the crap that they're putting up with around them. And that's kind of the reality of it. So I think for some, they do that.
And it's actually interesting, isn't it? Because that kind of that is another example of this this greater awareness of we want better than this from our leaders. Yeah, and the conversations
we do
having all year and are actually playing out at the ballot box. You know, they are actually playing out in those really significant environments where the vast majority of people are stepping up and saying, this isn't good enough. We want different. We want better.
We deserve.
Absolutely. And it also highlights the comment you made a little bit earlier as well, Tony, when you were saying we are seeing so much now come out into the public domain about bad corporate behaviour. Now,
that's
because people are talking about it and are no longer putting up with it. Again, it's this undercurrent of we want better, we deserve better than this.
And we can do better.
Absolutely.
And humanity as a whole can do better than we have done in the past. And our grandchildren, our children, and our great-grandchildren deserve to live in a world where these concepts are key to leadership and business across the world. And we need to keep having these conversations. One of the other weeks that we spoke about, which was very interesting, was around related party transaction, conflicts of interest, ethics and boundaries. It was another fascinating conversation, Lisa. And what were some of the things that you took out of that conversation we had?
So, I think it's so fundamental for organisations to, at the very, very least, recognise that they need to draw lines around behaviours in the organisation first. So the piece around values and behaviours and how you expect your employees, as part of the terms and conditions of them working in your organisation, need to behave, as opposed to they're modelling behaviours that are acceptable in the workplace environment, especially when in some organisations the modelling or the person being modelled is not actually exhibiting the best behaviours. So there's actually, I guess, quite a lot to say about the level of value and ethics and values framework can provide an organisation. It also gives the foundations for every hard conversation every employer has to have with an employee when it comes to non-performance, not achieving outcomes, and everyone being really clear and having a collective understanding of what the expectations are. So that's actually a really, really important component, I guess. One of the other things I think about, I guess, around our conversations wasn't so much about what organisations can have from a better practice standpoint, but I think about why some organisations don't have these things. For some, they feel like the organisation is actually too small. As I mentioned earlier, small organisations don't feel they need this stuff, where it is actually quite valuable for them to have that. other organisations, and I'll kind of refer this more to owner-operator type organisations. They own the business and they're operating it themselves. Some can have a little bit of a perfectionistic bent, which means that unless it's perfect and it's come out of their mouth or from their brain to their mouth to, you know, all the rest of it to God's ears, it really is one of those things where they actually don't decide. They don't realise that by not deciding that they've decided to not decide. So it's that really that the conversation and the dynamics around decision-making and not deciding to not decide and actually owning the non-decision is really, really important. And for the, if there's any listeners out there who do have a bit of a perfectionistic lens and might be thinking, oh, they might be talking about me because I'm not moving things forward, the piece of advice I give to you that I did see on a post recently from Instagram, it's not my quoted post, I'm sorry, I don't know who said it, but I'm sorry, but I'm still going to refer to it. I will say it's not mine. Something can still be useful if it's not perfect.
Correct.
So having something that at least
is better than nothing.
A line is better than nothing. And naturally we tend to, when we think about values and behaviors especially, people, when we go into organizations, naturally are very, very fast at listing all the things that are wrong and bad that we don't actually want to see happening. What I would say to those organizations, Irene's laughing, what I would say to the organizations who go, you know, we can't really bring, you know, someone like the Governance Collective in to help us with this, that's actually okay. What I would encourage you to do is just write a list of all of the things that you, behavior-wise, that you feel are no longer acceptable. And I encourage you to sit down with your team and co-create the reverse of what it looks like. In other words, you know, we're no longer going to swear at each other. It might be something that gets written down. I don't know whether organisations are doing that, but some, I guess, go there. The reverse of that is we will speak to each other calmly and respectfully, and we will treat each other the way we expect to be treated. And it's just purely flipping.
Really simple.
Really simple. Look at all the stuff that's just wrong and bad, and go, you know, let's just own it. And let's draw this line and say, okay, we know that these things are no longer, we're drawing a new line. These things are no longer acceptable. Let's just look at these negative statements or these negative behaviours and let's just flip it.
Because it is people that behave either well, they behave well or they don't behave well. And so when you actually look at the behavior and you analyze it, you do a couple of things. You actually take away the stigma of the blame on the person. You look at the behavior. This is what the behavior is. This is how it made me feel, and I'm not comfortable with that. So let's change that behavior. And how do we do that?
Yeah.
We put some principles in place for how we're going to treat each other. We put some principles in place for how we're going to treat people outside our organization, how we're going to communicate our decisions, what approaches are we going to take in making those decisions. So you evolve the principles, and that then helps you in managing the behaviors, because that's what ethics and values are, right? Ethics and values are actually the essence of an organization's identity. Ethics and values tell you what it is that we do here.
Yes.
This is what we do here story bit. And then the behaviors are the, and this is how we do it bit.
That's correct. So I actually, sorry, Irene, say again.
That it's so all intertwined, you know, it's because we're human
beings, it is.
We behave in certain ways, and some are acceptable and some are unacceptable. Let's deal with the unacceptables, you know.
And can I just add too, one of the really valuable things around the process, I guess, or the conversations that we're talking about now, is that the more business owners and leaders get their team involved in co-creating these principles
or
these actual behaviours, the ideal behaviours, the more they're co-created with the individuals who have to do it, the more they will own it. In fact, the have to will be gone. The have to part, I'm not going to make you behave yourself. I want you to co-create the lines around how we're going to be behaving moving forward. And once we co-create it, I do reasonably have an expectation that you're actually going to be delivering the behaviors against that. So it's a really important part. Sorry, Tony.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just going to share a little bit of personal information with our audience, because having worked with Lisa and the team at the Governance Collected, it's kind of tipped off in my brain memories from my corporate world. And I'm just a sole company owner. I am the head of the company. I am the everything. I have a small team of people around me, but it's triggered in me something that I want to set the stage for. And as small as I am now, I have a great big vision. And I just thought at this last show, I'll quickly share what I describe as the start of my strategic foundation, because then I'd like to ask Lisa and Irene for their thoughts. So my vision is creating legacies that have heart-centered impact. My mission is to inspire, empower, educate, and help. I value patience, acceptance of help and support, accountability and assertiveness. And then I have a great big goal that governs all of that, and it's to provide an opportunity for all those that have the courage to rise above their trauma, to actualize their dreams denied to them by injustice. So that's the start of my strategic foundation. And under that, I will start doing an organizational structure. I will head towards having an advisory board because I'm a sole company owner. But that's a result of having talked to Lisa and the team in these last, it's reminded me of my corporate background. And as small as I am, and as a sole proprietor of a small company, I've got a big vision and I want to protect that big vision. So this work is important. Everything that the Governance Collective is related to that strategic foundation or strategic intent. So Lisa, I thought I'd ask what you think, and then Irene, I'll ask your thoughts too.
First of all, goosebumps all over. I think that
hairs on the back of neck. Me too.
Yeah, I really did feel it. You know, Tony, when you're really resonating with something, that there's you've got the yes response within your head, but I actually get physical responses as well, and so I can tell you that you've articulated an absolutely admirable, amazingly admirable, beautiful vision and mission for your business. It is big and hairy and audacious, and at the same time, totally achievable, which is actually not a bad thing. Everyone needs, I guess, to really consider that bigger picture. Over time, what I do find, and I don't know if this will be the case for you or not, the values that you've articulated are really, really beautiful. Over time, you might find that you'll add to them.
Okay.
And the reason why I sense that you'll probably add to them is because As we grow, as we learn and as we grow, we find over time that the lines that we're defining when it comes to our values and our behaviours is linked to the concept of what we put out there, we get back.
Yeah.
So if you believe it, you'll achieve it. And I actually sense over time, and I, again, not just sense it, but from an experience standpoint, the values that you set at the beginning of your business venture to when you're probably 3 years ahead to maybe 5 to 8 to 10 years ahead will change over time. And so I guess my feedback to you is to just be open that there's more to come.
I wanted somewhere strong to start, and I wanted to articulate that so that I could put it on my whiteboard so that it's present and around me from the get-go whilst I work on all those other things that I want to put in place.
Absolutely. So what I would recommend that you consider doing next, would you like to get some insights around what you could consider doing next?
Absolutely.
Okay. So now that you've got your vision and your mission and you've got a very clear picture of what that big audacious goal looks and feels like, I would start having a think about how you can actually incrementally measure how to get there. So I would start with I would go to measurement next. And the reason why I'd go to measurement is because measurement forces you to start prioritizing where you focus first. That's the first thing. The second thing that measurement will force you to do is say, wait a minute, for me to measure this, I've got to do this and this. And wait a minute, who's going to do that? So you actually start unbundling what kind of structure and frameworks you need to be able to deliver against that strategic goal, or you actually unbundle the strategic goals into a more of a tangible, what does that look and feel like, and how can I check in and know whether I'm actually on the right path or not?
And that was when that thought bubble occurred around having a formalized advisory committee around me that would keep me accountable to those strategic goals and intent that I want to reach.
Yeah, and so that's the level above. So consider now the level below, because once you have the key initiatives and the performance measures in place, you can then be really clear about what operational structure you need. And then you can also very cleanly apply accountabilities for each of those components to your team members. And then once you've got enough,
then tied to their roles.
And it's tied to their roles. The other thing I would do, once you actually have a really clear picture around each component, how you're going to measure key components and what it is you're going to be doing from a delivery standpoint, I would then start an ongoing process of assessing risk. I would put a really basic framework in place, and I would actually say to you that the initial risk assessment really is on the risk of implementing these new potentially changed activities to realign or to further you, and the impact of that change on your existing operations. And this is one of the things that we find that organizations sometimes really forget. They think, oh, we've got a new strategic plan now, we're going to go off and do that now. But what they're actually forgetting is they've got these foundational operations that are funding the new direction, and they're not risk assessed to recognize that.
How it's going to impact those.
So sometimes I'll just, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, and they forget that their main source of income was that thing over there that they've just thrown out. And all of a sudden, they're too busy. It's that balance between focusing forward through the windscreen and actually looking backwards through the rearview mirror, and actually knowing what has to be in the car with you right now that needs to be maintained and manage risk in that way. So we've got some great little frameworks, Tony. If you want to reach out offline, I've got some great stuff that will help you with that.
Absolutely.
And as I know we've talked about before, people work with us in different ways. Startups. Yes. We provide templates, frameworks for them, and give them a little bit of training to go off and do it themselves. And they can check in with us over time just to go, what do you think, you know, model change, et cetera, et cetera. Or we can hold your hand, or we can just do it if you just do it as well. So have a bit of a think
about
who you need, and, of course, reach out if you need to, because we're here.
Absolutely. I've just looked at the time, ladies, and Irene, you've got about 1 minute. Did you have any thoughts?
And I'll speak for half. I had many thoughts while you were speaking, and the two massive words that are still ringing in my head are trauma and injustice. And I love the fact that you have identified in your mission and your objectives, you've pinpointed exactly what it is that you want, right? So this is a whole start as you mean to go on. This is what, this is where I want to be, and I'm at the starting point here. And there's another phrase that came to my mind while you were speaking about those things, Tony, and it was, from little things, big things grow. And and there is no little business or little person or little entrepreneur out there that cannot grow and realize big dreams.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, my lovely ladies, I am so sad to say that it is the end of our last show, and what a privilege to talk to both of you. What a privilege to get to know Lisa on a human level with a human connection, and I see that there will be work between us down the future. And for those listening, please get in contact with Lisa and the team. Support the Governance Collective at, sorry, support@governancecollective.com. The company name is the Governance Collective. These girls are brilliant at what they do. They're inspiring, they're heartfelt, and they will hold your hand if you need to, or allow you the access you need to the documents that you need. So many levels of ability to help small, large, and medium businesses and corporations. And it's been a pleasure working with the Governance Collective. Thank you, Irene, and thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
I know that Lisa and I will continue to have many chats into the future, and I know that there will be a path somewhere for us to join together and work together again. But as for this series, it's the last Radio Tony Everyday Business with the Governance Collective, and it's been my absolute pleasure to co-host and facilitate these important discussions around heart-centered leadership and governance. That, my friends, is all for this week. Love to you all, and we will see you again next week. Thanks, TJ.